Welcome to the Back to Nine Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Back to Nine Report, presented by eDraft.com. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Every week, I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Alvader, who's back this week after he was traveling and doing a lot of stuff for the show. And he's back. First of all, thank you to Kieran Clark for being with us last week. So thank you, Kieran. But Fred, welcome back. I have a hangover because the Olympics are over, man. They're over. No.
Get over it, Carlos. It's the playoffs. Who needs the playoffs? We need playoffs, Carlos. The Olympics are over. It's time to get down to the serious money. Indy Park recovered from her hand injury quite nicely, thank you very much, and won the first women's gold medal in golf since 1900. World number one, Lydia Ko, was forced to accept silver, and China's Shanshan Fang got the bronze. No USA sweep here, Carlos. A new young name pops onto our radar at the Wyndham Championship, and golf finally returns to normal after the Olympics, and the Ryder Cup picture is coming into focus. We've got a ton of golf to talk about, so let's go.
Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs. You kidding me? Playoffs?
It's playoffs. Let's go.
Kidding me? Playoffs? Let's talk about Olympics. That's what happened.
$69 million dollars on the line, Carlos. $69 million.
That's nothing. That's not important. The Olympics was important. I mean, we're gonna.
It's over. Get over it. It's done.
We have to talk about it because it happened this past weekend. You know, it took the men 112 years to play golf again in the world's biggest sports nation. It took the women 4 years more, 116, to play again. This time, they didn't receive porcelain bowls. They received medals. The men put on a show the past week, and the women, with all the top players in the field, were expected to put in another one, and they didn't disappoint. South Korean star Inbee Park, she held off the rest of the field last Saturday in Rio to win gold at the first women's golf competition since 1900. The 28-year-old Park shot a 5-under 66 in round 4 to lap the field at 16-under, the same mark Justin Rose posted to win the men's competition. Park had not made a cut on the LPGA Tour since April and had not played at all since June because of a troublesome left thumb injury. But this week, she rediscovered the form that made her one of the most successful women golfers of all time and proved what a great closer she is once she gets the lead. After Park enjoyed an historic run in 2015 that included winning the career Grand Slam, she endured some criticism for even playing in the Olympics, having missed most of this season. She answered those critics by proving she's still one of the game's best players. The win moved her up to number 4 in the world. Team coach and South Korean legend Sae-ri Park was very emotional. She was shedding tears as she embraced Inbee after the tournament. So were her teammates Yi Shun, Amy Yang, and Se-young Kim, who welcomed her in great team spirit. They were very happy for her. You know, South Korea had those four players in the field this week, the most out of any country, so it's no surprise the country earned gold. However, the favorite to win gold heading into the event was overwhelmingly world number one, Lydia Ko. She was born in South Korea, but she plays for New Zealand, the country where she has spent most of her life, earned a silver medal after finishing at 11 under. She made a clutch 10-foot birdie putt on the par 5-18 to earn second place. You know, her expression when she was going to make that putt was priceless. It was this combination of tension and heavy focus on the task at hand. And as the putt barely lifted in, her expression changed to one of happiness and relief. You know, she has made a silver medal winning putt. It also meant another youngest to do something for Lydia. She became the youngest New Zealand female to win an Olympic medal. Lydia is something special. Fred, you interviewed her for the show. And when you listen to her in the post-round interview, you realize why she has the perspective to do all she does. I mean, to have it all together in 19, wow. China's Shen Shanfeng earned the bronze medal after finishing the tournament at 10-under. She shot a 269 in the round 4 to outlast a host of players chasing her. Feng didn't know the score going into the 18th hole. I mean, she didn't know she was going for a bronze. Maybe if she knew when she was told after securing the medal, after finishing, but then she showed the happiness that went with it. Maybe if she knew, she would have been maybe more aggressive at 18 and not lived that short when she did with her birdie putt. Who knows? Maybe that bronze that she won could be a very needed game changer for golf back in her home nation of China. She alluded to it and saying that with four players these past 2 weeks participating, if one could medal, that could change golf in China. And she was happy that she was the one that did it. In fact, LPGA Commissioner Michael Wong called having Fong on the podium a game and perspective changer for golf in that country. One of those players that were chasing Fong for that bronze medal was American Stacey Lewis, who shot a 5-under-66 Saturday to get to 9-under. She tied Japan's Hideyuko Nomura for fourth. Lewis finished her final round with 6 birdies and 1 bogey. She was trying to join American Matt Kuchar, who won bronze in golf's men's side. But she left her putt on the 18th hole a couple of inches short and missed out on a possible playoff for bronze by one stroke. One stroke. She was dejected when she left that short. She couldn't believe it. I think she should still have some nightmares from that one. Fellow American Jarena Pillar. She played in the final group alongside Coan Park, but she stumbled into a tie for 11th at 6-under. Pillar shot a 3-over-74 with 3 bogeys and no birdies during her last 10 holes. On her post-round interview with the Golf Channel, I mean, if you didn't know how much it meant to Jarena, you got an up-close and personal view of it. She gallantly spoke, but she got overwhelmed by her emotions. And there, I assure you, there weren't many dry eyes like it. There weren't many dry eyes. There should have been a lot of wet eyes like hers in front of TVs everywhere in the world, including mine. One of the highlights of the final round came from Russia's Maria Vershinova, who almost didn't make the trip due to a possible ban on her country for the WADA doping scandal. She shot 62, bettering the mark established by Marcus Fraser and Matt Kuchar in the men's competition and equaled by Stacey Lewis on Friday. Making Vershinova's magical round even more incredible is the fact that it included the hole-in-one in the par 3 fourth that she didn't know it went in until she was told by her caddy. Then she was happy and celebrating. But I'll say something later about the grow of the game concept. But she said in her interview that she was trying to make a difference and change things back at home where golf is not popular. Fred, I'm going to stop here for now. I have a lot more to say, but, you know, I can take the whole show talking about this. But let me know, how about your take on the Women's Olympic Golf Tournament?
Well, Carlos, before we get to that, I got one really important question. I know you watched it. I was not able to watch it on Sunday. What happened to Ariya Jutanugarn?
She got injured at the end of Friday, in her knee. She was trying to bend on the 11th hole on Saturday. On Friday, she was trying. After the second round, she felt that she was having some pain on her knee. And then on Friday, she tried to finish, but after her 11th hole, she just couldn't go anymore at it, and she had to withdraw. So she apparently has an injury on her knee and couldn't play anymore, but I haven't heard anything afterwards about what's going on with her. So, but that was what happened to her, an injury to her knee.
You know, the story about the Russian Maria Vershinova barely getting in because of the doping scandal in Russia, and then setting the course record at 62. What, there had been a couple of people shoot 63. Stacey had a 63 early in the week. Justin Rose had a 63 for the men. But Vershinova shot the 62 to set the record, the course record, for both men and women. Then you also have the story about the young lady from India, Aditi Ashok, That was quite a story also. Do you have that too?
Yes, I do. Yes.
So you'll cover that.
I'll talk about her in my next statement.
Cool. Well, slow play was an issue again. I know they addressed it. I know they had some trouble with that. You know, Carlos, this thing was just a huge success, huge. The U.S. ratings for the golf compared to the majors, the Masters final round was the only one that had more viewership than the Olympic final round in golf. And, you know, I mean, I can imagine, you know, all the people watching swimming in prime time and, you know, watching gymnastics in prime time on NBC, and the numbers are big, and that's why they pay the big bucks to cover it, you know. But for golf, you know, which basically was broadcast in the mornings and the early afternoon, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The Olympic final round was 8.8 million, second only to the Masters. 3 million more than the U.S. Open, 3 million more than the PGA, almost 4 million more than the British Open. So, and that's broadcast in the mornings and early afternoon. That's, so it was double that, basically. So the, and then the ratings in Korea for the NB Park win were completely off the charts. 23.9 share. Almost one in every four persons watching a TV in Korea was watching women's golf in the Olympics. That is just off the charts. So the numbers were really big for the TV. NBC, Golf Channel, they hit a home run. They had a good crew there broadcasting. It was enjoyable to listen to. The only bad thing was that Judy Rankin had some kind of virus, was not able to get on camera, and so Annika Sorenstam had to fill in, and Annika is not going to win any awards for being a golf commentary specialist anytime soon, I'm afraid. But she filled in and did admirably. Many prominent golf writers are declaring the Olympic golfs just a tremendous success. Jaime Diaz, who we've had on the show, said, "In essence, Olympic golf has become the closest thing to the Ryder Cup. Worth it to play for free. A place, especially if it becomes, as expected, more of a team event to deepen friendships. Something worth sacrificing for and not to be missed. Amid the distortions that come with professionalism, commercialism, and politics, on the field at least, a chance for pure golf amid what aspires to be a pure sport." Matt Kuchar got a hero's welcome at the St. Simon Airport when he arrived home as the only American as the only American to medal in the golf competitions. Alan Shipnuck weighed in. "We didn't miss any of the players who weren't there, but based on the longing in their texts and tweets, they know they missed out on something special." Carlos, you tried to tell them all along. You tried to tell them. I know. We've been talking about it for a long time. David Verity may have had the best quote, though.
Oh, yeah.
"Hell, I saw one mosquito, and the whole time I was down there, and it was at the bar at the Hilton drinking a Jack Daniels because I don't think it trusted the water." So there you go.
Yeah.
Don't have to worry about the skeeters, but you got to worry about the water. Many are calling for a change in the format for 2020, more like a World Cup, 72 holes with the singles and a team aspect tied to it. And, Carlos, I just got this overall comment, and then I'll shut up and let you finish it. You know, the men's, even with Justin Rose and Henrik Stenson's going toe-to-toe down the final hole, was just fantastic. The course lent itself to lots of birdies, but presented enough problems for the golfers to keep it interesting. The women's tournament brought the best players to the top of the leaderboard, and NB Park capped off her year and Hall of Fame career with the gold medal. It was the steady, cagey veteran, Park, versus the calm and steady, young Lydia Ko. The race for the bronze was tight, and Fung won out at the end. As for the Americans, Stacey Lewis fired a 66 on Sunday, but came up one shot short of a medal. Jarena Pillar, Sunday 74, moved her down to T11, and Lexi Thompson moved up 19 spots on Sunday with her own 66. but started the day clear down in 31st place. The golfers got to hang out with real athletes who play for fun, not for money. And golf should see all of its stars in 4 years when they resume in Tokyo, Carlos.
Can't wait for it. Can't wait for it. And I have to talk now a little bit about the Gorilla Games concept that is being thrown. And I also comment something about the change of format that some are calling for, but not to thunder it. But anyway, you know, this about growing the game is something that we won't be able to qualify for some years. But of the major tours, especially the PGA Tour, if they don't capitalize on this humongous moment, everything will be in vain. And I said the PGA Tour because they did absolutely zero to motivate the players to go there. In fact, it looked like they didn't want their players to go. And they're suffering the consequences right now because both the John Deere Classic and the Wyndham this past weekend suffered being in Nielsen, the second to least and the third to least watched rounds of golf all year long. That's what it suffered. You wanted to put tournaments against the Olympics, and they're suffering. The LPGA was intelligent. They didn't do anything about that. They sent everyone there. They promoted it. They made
so the Women's Olympics just killed the Women's Olympics just killed the PGA Tour on TV.
Totally, and not only that, the final round was the most watched the most watched round from the women's all year long,
yeah.
by far.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's amazing that the PGA banked on trying to get tournaments there, making it impossible for some of the players to try to qualify for the FedEx Cup. Man, let him go. It's the Olympics. You're not going to – what those sponsors are thinking right now that, oh, man, we put all this money and we had nothing to show for. But, you know, TV ratings were off the roof internationally with record-setting audiences everywhere. We know the men's final, like you said, produced the second most watched behind the Masters this year. The coverage of the Olympic women's golf tournament delivered 691,000 viewers on Golf Channel Saturday morning, according to the Nielsen's Fast Nationals, the largest cable audience of the year for women's golf. The previous high was 582,000 for the final round of the Women's PGA Championship in June. On the internet, it was off the charts as well. The search for the term beginner's golf in the internet went up by 115%. For the term golf clubs, it went up 125%. The countries leading the charge were Canada, Ireland, Great Britain, and number four, India. This follows up a big audience that was watching Anirban Lahiri last week. And this week, like you mentioned, 17-year-old Aditi Ashok, who was the youngest to compete, she just turned pro to play in the Olympics, and she did it by joining the Ladies European Tour by becoming the first Indian player to win the Lala Aika Tour School. And you know what was even more impressive? She shot 23 under par to do it at only 17 years old. So Sheena was not only the youngest player in the Olympic women's golf this week. She competed. She was there after two rounds. So unfortunately, the last two rounds, she didn't do well. But she was only the only female golfer representing India, and that's a place where a lot of people are starting to tune in for that. There were players who were flag bearers, like Julieta Granada for Paraguay, Siddhi Karabrakman for Bangladesh. You could see their excitement in their faces, and people in those countries were like, oh, do we play golf? Really? What are they doing? That's the impact that it's doing. You know, it remains to be seen if all this momentum translates into golf traffic. But that is why we have to capitalize on it. Asia is being the next frontier tap right now, but many say that Latin America is the next frontier in golf, and there were many Latin American players there. The Olympic golf course could be the start on a country of over $200 million people, where only 25,000 play on it. The course is now in the Brazilian Federation hands, and the IGF will fund it. It's a walking public course, which will require a lot of caddies, and that's a great way to introduce kids to the game. There is also already talks about a possible President's Cup being played there, a PGA Latin America event, a possible Brazilian Open, so incentive is there. You know, there were 30 of the countries that were at the Olympics. don't have the budgets in their OCs, and this could start to change if next year the IOC votes to retain golf beyond 2020. Now, about the format, that's like trying to look for a simple fix to something that they don't have to fix. The 72-stroke play tournament was a success. That's what it's played. Very few tournaments are played outside of that format. It gave a lot of players a shot at winning a medal. It's the only place where you see that players are trying to, if they are not going to win, 1 and 2 is the most important right now in every tournament. But now it's 1, 2, and 3. You're trying to get a medal. And there were a lot of players at that in the final round trying to win that golf medal. The reason why they didn't introduce a team format, like, because they tried to put two players like in a team, and then they were trying to combine the scores of the top two players from each country to provide a team medal. That would have been 24 teams for the men and the women. For the men, Sweden would have won by one shot over the Americans. And Justin Rose, Brady Putt to win the gold medal, also would have given Britain the bronze medal by one shot over Spain. But the thing is that the IOC doesn't allow for two competitions in one. So a team format would have had to be a separate competition, and trying to squeeze that into 2 weeks on an 18-hole golf course, that was brand new for the competition without knowing how much stress it would take, and really it would take a lot of effort to do that and to pull it out. Also, it would have taken some other players that wouldn't have the chance to compete, some other countries that wouldn't have played, like Venezuela for Jonathan Vegas, would not have a partner. Lydia Ko would have been left out too, the world number one. As it was, 6 medals went to 6 nations over 2 weeks, so it wasn't all that bad. One element that won't change, or shouldn't, is the 72 holes of stroke play. Now, there's one thing that could happen. You know, golf will be held at the Kasumagesi Country Club in Japan for 2020. That golf course has 36 holes, and the best option might be to have both courses available if it makes sense. And if the IOC, of course, is willing to allow for medals for golf back then. But anyway, to me, I don't see it. They changing the 72-hole format stroke play. They're trying to see what they do, but they cannot change that. That's really, it was too much of a success, and really very, very few tournaments throughout the years that use another format, so there's a reason for that. I don't think it should be a change on that. So anyway, Fred, that would be all that I have. If you have anything else before you start to talk about the PGA Tour.
No, I was just going to make the point that you just wrapped up with, that 6 different countries won medals. So it was very diverse across the board. One country did not dominate, which you'd think the U.S. with all its golfers and the quality golfers that they sent, you know, they had 4 in the men's, 3 in the women's, that they would have least, gotten more than just one. So, you know, it was very good. I don't have anything to complain about any of it. I was very impressed. As you know, I've been skeptical from day one, but I think the biggest issue that you hit on is that the PGA Tour is going to have to make room for the Olympics in 2020. They can't have events scheduled against it. They might have learned their lesson here. They're going to have to alter their schedule, Carlos.
Totally. One final point that I had a this note here, and I skipped through it. I don't know if you guys saw, but Inbae Park got a hero's welcome in South Korea.
And I did see that, yeah.
An incredible thing also to note about the ratings there for the TV. You mentioned that it was 23.9% viewership there, and the funny thing is that it was at 2:08 a.m. Sunday in South Korea,
yeah,
that they were,
yeah,
watching. Okay, so that's how big it's outside of our little world of golf here in the States. Outside of the States, it becomes great a thing. This is about the Olympics can grow, and hopefully, you know, it can turn into golf traffic, and hopefully the PGA gets the message and starts working for it. So, but anyway, that'll be a wrap up on the Women's Olympic golf tournament, which was definitely a success also as well. And hopefully we'll see more on 2020 and beyond in the Olympics. And Fred, there was action. Yes, there was some more action in the PGA Tour. And there was some great performances by Siwoo Kim.
Yeah, there was another tournament, the PGA Tour, as we talked about, held the Wyndham Championship. And, you know, it is important for a couple reasons. These are kind of side notes, as it all turned out, with the Olympics going on. But, you know, first, it gives a couple of the players that want to make the Ryder Cup team a chance to earn more valuable points, a la Ricky Fowler. With the compression of the schedule this season, the tournament was filled with younger guys, which gave them a shot at winning, while the big names took the week off to get ready for the FedEx Cup playoffs. And speaking of playoffs, it gives the guys at the bottom of the list an opportunity to move inside the top 125. And, Carlos, we track this every year. Historically, a few do make the move up inside the top 125, and such was the case this year. The biggest move was by Kyle Stanley, who moved up 11 spots. That's a major move, from 127 all the way to number 116. Sean Stefani moved up 10 spots to 123. David Toms hung on to finish at 124. Matt Jones dropped two spots from 124 and got the unlucky number 126, just one spot out of the playoff. And then Wee Kim fell from number 125 to 127. He fell out of the playoffs. So-Young Noel got the final number 125 position for the Barclays. All of these guys will have their work cut out for them to hang around and make the Deutsche Bank Championship in Boston the following week. And, oh, yeah, don't let me forget here. There was a first-time winner, too. 21-year-old Siwoo Kim proved that the women aren't the only Koreans that can play a little golf. In the second round on Friday, he posted a, wait for it, a 60. 10 under par, 60. Carlos, what is all of this 58, 59, and 60 business? Every week we got somebody doing this. Has golf gotten easier and someone forgot to tell me about it? Oh, yeah. He followed up his 60 with a smooth little 64 in the third round. Luke Donald, get this. Luke Donald, you remember him? He was number one a few years ago from England, lives in Chicago, went to Northwestern University, Big Ten, by the way. You know, nice guy. He shoots 65, 68, his own 64, and his 67, and he loses by five shots. Give me a break. Kim closed with a 67 on Sunday to equal the tournament record of 21 under par. Carlos, you can add his name to the young guns on the PGA Tour that have wins in their early 20s. Speaking of Luke Donald, the runner-up finish turned his so-so year into a solid event and moved from number 99 to on the FedEx Cup to number 48, which most likely will give him three playoff starts. This was Donald's second runner-up this season and snapped a string of a couple straight missed cuts. And the last storyline from the Wyndham Championship, Ricky Fowler is trying to earn his way onto the Ryder Cup team. Fowler is stuck in 12th on a Ryder Cup points list, and does not want to make Davis Love have to choose to pick him for the team. He said, I'm very close. His two rounds of 67 and a pair of 68s at least gave a little credence to his words. I know how close it is to being really good. I'm excited about that and nice to get some reps in here and wish we could have gotten some more Ryder Cup points, but we go after it next week. Fowler is comfortably in the top 30 on the FedEx Cup list, but wanted to improve his Ryder Cup standing. He moved to 28th in the FedEx Cup, but remained in 12th on the Ryder Cup list. Fowler has one more week to try to work his way into the top 8 in the Ryder Cup standings and automatically qualify for the U.S. team. Captain Davis Love gets to make 4 picks, 3 after the BMW Championship and another when the Tour Championship has concluded. While the Olympian would have liked a week off before heading to the Barclays, he thinks the decision to leave Rio de Janeiro and head north to Greensboro was the right one. He said he had an awesome week and leaves feeling better about his game. So, Fowler still stays in 12th. We're going to talk about Ryder Cup some more after a bit, Carlos. But there was a lot of storylines at Wyndham, even though nobody was watching.
Oh, my goodness. There was. There was also action on the European Tour where former Oregon State golfer Paul Peterson made birdies on the 16th and 18th holes to win the Czech Masters in the Czech Republic for his first European Tour victory. Peterson, who played at OSU from 2007 to 2010 and had a 73.12 scoring average, that is the ninth best in school history, shot a 567 in Sunday's final round to beat Thomas Peters of Belgium by a shot. With the win, Peterson became fully exempt on the European Tour through next year. Thomas Peters applied some pressure there on the 18th hole, hitting his approach to shot to 3 feet, but before Peters could attempt his putt, Peterson rolled in a birdie putt from 17 feet to seal the victory. The 28-year-old is in his second full season on the European Tour. A resident of Scottsdale, Arizona, he turned pro in 2012 and has one other professional win in the Western Printing Pro-Am at Moccasin Creek on the Dakotas Tour. The result ended Peters' hopes of automatic placing on the Europe's Ryder Cup team, since he needed a victory in Prague and also next weekend in Denmark, the last point counting tournament. English Matthew Fitzpatrick, on the other hand, made almost certain for taking the final spot in Europe's Ryder Cup team by finishing fifth on 10 under for it.
Yeah, Peters, he's going to be an interesting guy to watch here with see what Darren Clark does. He had a great Olympics, and here he has a really good tournament on the European Tour again this week. Hey, Carlos, J.J. Spahn drained a 12-foot putt at the last hole to avoid a playoff and get his first win on the Web.com Tour. His buddies have been referring to him as the bridesmaid for two runner-up finishes and four top tens this season on the Web.com as a rookie. Spahn erased the use of that nickname and gave himself the best 26th birthday present he could ask for. On his 26th birthday, he posted a 26-under total for the week, edged out his best friend Sam Ryder by one shot after Ryder had missed an 8-foot birdie at the last to force the playoff. The win moves Spahn to number 3 on the Web.com Tour money list and assures his PGA Tour card for next year. In addition, at this tournament, something really unique happened, Carlos. I don't know if you saw this or not, but I kind of like this story. I think it might be the best story of the week, actually, at the News Sentinel Open. That was the pairing of Adam Shank, Ryan Yip, and Jared Hack. Hack, Shank, and Yip. Sounds like an accurate description of my golf game. Several pictures of the portable scoreboards showed the three unfavorable golf shots around the course on Sunday with the names of the group. Shank got the better of Hack and Yip last week. He finished solo sixth, seven shots back of the winner. Yip was T8, and Hack brought up the rear with an 11th place finish. So, you can still get the Shanks, have a Hack, or the Yips, and still earn some money on the Web.com Tour. Carlos, back to you.
And to talk a little bit about the Legends Tour, Trish Johnson beat native Santa Cruiser Julie Inkster with a par on the sixth hole of an epic playoff on Sunday in the Legends Championship.
The big news here, Carlos, is that Julie Inkster failed to win a Legend Tour event that she entered. That's the big news.
That was my next sentence, but you got it there. In French Lake, Indiana.
Sorry, I jumped the gun.
So it proved that she's human after all, and she can lose tournaments.
Yeah.
Johnson and Easter, he shot 1-under-71 to finish regulation at 5-under-139 on the Pete Dye course at French Lake Resort. The playoff was the longest in the history of the 16-year-old Legends Tour. Johnson earned $37,000 for her first Legends title. The 50-year-old English player won three times on the LPGA Tour, and the 56-year-old Inkster made a 10-foot birdie putt on the par 18 in regulation to force the playoff. Last year, it was the Hall of Famer who won the event, beating Johnson by two strokes. Dame Laura Davis was third at 2-under after 71.
Yeah, those courses down there, French Lick, Carlos, are fantastic. And anybody who's not been to French Lick needs to go. And the Legend Tournament they have down there, that's a big deal. And also, Pete Dye's wife, Alice Dye, has an annual women's tournament of her own there every year that if you're a lady and you like to play golf, it might be something you want to look into, try to get into Alice Dye's annual tournament down there. Hey, Carlos, let's talk just a minute about the U.S. Amateur. Australian and Duke University collegiate golfer Curtis Luck won 8 consecutive holes of the afternoon round to gain a commanding lead and defeated Brad Dalkey of Norman, Oklahoma, 6-4 Sunday in the 36-hole final match of the 116th U.S. Amateur Championship held at Oakland Hills Country Club. Dalkey, a University of Oklahoma sophomore, celebrated his 19th birthday during Friday's quarterfinal round, won the first hole of the afternoon 18 with a birdie to go one up, but must have pissed Luck off because he powered up with a 7-up advantage by claiming the next 8 holes. During that stretch, Luck was the match play equivalent of 4 under par and posted an eagle and 2 birdies on the course that Ben Hogan dubbed the Monster in winning the 1951 U.S. Open. If you remember, we talked about Pete Kowalski from the USGA last week about the international flavor of the U.S. Amateur, and an international player won this week. In the second round of medal play on Tuesday, Davis Riley posted a 7-under 63 on the North Course for a new competitive record. After the 36-hole qualifier medal tournament, 23 players had to tee it up early Wednesday morning to play for 8 spots in the 64-man match play field. The players had to play a hole and then wait while the rest of the competitors completed each hole. It took 4 hours to decide the 8 spots for the match play. Oakland Hills has hosted 6 U.S. Opens in the past, the last one being in 1996. It has also hosted 2 U.S. Senior Championships and 3 PGAs. With the completion of this U.S. Amateur last week, it is seeking a 7th U.S. Open. With the fact that they hosted 312 amateurs and their families in Bloomington Hills, plus pulled off a successful tournament under wet conditions, Oakland Hills proved once again that Ben Hogan was probably right. It's still a monster and can host the best players in the world in a U.S. Open championship, Carlos. And I also want to make just real quick mention here that the LPGA returns to action this week. No rest for those guys. They finish up in Rio and head right to Alberta, Canada for the Canadian Pacific Women's Open. Lydia Ko is the defending champion and has won this event 3 of the last 4 years. It has one of the bigger purses on tour with $2.25 million up for grabs. Also, Carlos, the future stars of the LPGA will enter first stage of the LPGA qualifying tournament that's being held this week at Mission Hills Country Club in Rancho Mirage, California.
Well, with that, we'll wrap up our week in Backspin. And when we come back, we're going to take our first short break. When we come back, we have the Par 5 News, so don't go away.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the Par 5 News. And Fred, you have the tee shot, and you're going to tell us a little bit about the latest that is going on with the Ryder Cup rosters.
Yeah, with the Olympics over, we're heading into the FedEx Cup playoffs this week. It's getting time to set the teams for the upcoming Ryder Cup. We're only a little less than 6 weeks from the Ryder Cup competition at Hazeltine, just outside of Minneapolis. The 8 automatic qualifiers for the U.S. team will be decided this week after the Barclays. Three of the four American captains picks will be announced on Monday following the BMW Championship. That's the third leg of the FedEx Cup playoffs. And then Davis Love will announce his final pick on Sunday, September 25th. Are you ready for some football? After the conclusion of the Tour Championship during halftime of the NFL Sunday Night Football game on NBC. Nice little plug for NBC there. Right now, with one event remaining, that's this week, the Barclays, Dustin Johnson, Jordan Spieth, Phil Mickelson, Jimmy Walker, Brooks Koepka, Brant Snedeker, Zach Johnson, and Patrick Reed are the automatic eight-team members. Nice mix of long ball hitters, the shot makers, youth, and veterans. I like this group a lot, Carlos. It's nice deal there. You got Koepka is really the only member that has not been on a President's Cup or Ryder Cup team previously. You know, and there are some more veterans available for Davis Love to pick for his captain's picks. J.B. Holmes, Bubba Watson, Matt Kuchar, and Ricky Fowler make up the next four spots just outside the automatic eight. And the only other realistic pick when I look down through there is Jim Furyk at number 15. He's already a vice captain. Bill Haas possibly is number 14, but he really hasn't done anything to impress the last couple months. So the only real question here is whether or not Davis Love will choose J.B. Holmes or will he'll go outside. I really think this is pretty much a done deal for Love. I think he's just going to go right with the top 12. I just don't see him straying.
The
team has a nice mix. Yeah, I just don't see it.
I think JV's out. I think JV's out. I don't think.
Who's he going to put in then? You going to put bring Haas in?
No, I think hard about this, but I believe there's a name that is being thrown around lately, and that's Justin Thomas.
Justin Thomas. That's the only other name.
The only thing is that he's so down, back down there, that might be the thing. But Jim Furyk, I would say that the only thing that, because I was listening, that they were telling him, hey, you're playing yourself out of the committee, the selection committee. But who knows? The thing is that if he's ready to play the enough matches that he should play. But I think that Justin Thomas, you know, and being a friend, good friend with Jordan Spieth, he could make up for a good, you know, pairing or something there. But Justin Thomas, I think they're trying to look for a young guy, and I think that he should fit the bill there. What you think?
It very well could be. He would be the only other choice that I can see. I just don't, you know, I think everything else pretty much is locked in. You know, you're not going to turn away Bubba. You're not going to turn away Matt Kuchar. Mm-hmm. You're not going to turn away Ricky Fowler. So, you know, you got one spot left, and where do you go? You go young or you go old? You stay with JB because, you know, he's just one spot out still, but he hasn't done anything lately. His point all came earlier in the year, so I don't know. That will be a tough one. I think Justin Thomas will have his shots. I think he's got enough. You know, the pressure's on him to win, Carlos. Do you take a flyer on Justin Thomas, or do you go with somebody you know? You know, somebody that's been around, somebody that's been there. Brooks Koepka, you got a rookie there. Boy, that's a tough one. That is a tough one. It just comes down to who the guys, you know, Davis listens to the guys, okay? Phil, Jordan, Dustin Johnson throw a lot of weight with what they want. And if they go to Davis Love and say, I really want this, he'll give that a lot of credence, I know. So, hey, let's talk about the Euros for a minute. I think there's a lot more things unsettled for the Europeans this time coming around. The top nine right now are Rory McIlroy, Danny Willett, Henrik Stenson, Chris Wood, Sergio Garcia, Justin Rose, Rafa Caballero-Bello, Andy Sullivan, and Matt Fitzpatrick kind of locked up his spot last week with his good play. Four of those are Ryder Cup rookies. You know, Clark may need some experience with his picks, but Russell Knox is, you know, the first one out, and he's the hottest golfer right now. So, I mean, you got to pick him, don't you? You got to pick Russell Knox, right? And then you've got Lee Westwood, Soren Yeltsin, Thomas Peters, who's Peters is playing well. He played well in the Olympics, played well in the Czech. Then you've got Martin Keimer, Shane Lowry, and Andrew Johnson. Beef wants in. He said he'd pick himself if he was given the opportunity. So, you know, I don't know. Clark only gets three picks. And if one of them is going to be Russell Knox and if one of them is going to be Lee Westwood, which you'd almost bank on that. You'd almost bet on that, I would think.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're down to one spot for – and then you got Peters, Keimer, Lowry, Yeltsin. You know, if I cross out Yeltsin and I cross out Lowry, which I like Shane Lowry, actually. I like him a lot. He's a good buddy of Rory's. I mean, but Martin Keimer, I mean, he's, you know, he's been a stud in Ryder Cup play. And Thomas Peters, another young guy, but, man, he's been playing good. So, you know, I think Darren Clark has a lot more problems here. So, Carlos, I'm getting really excited about the Ryder Cup. Can you tell? I mean, what are your thoughts on some of this stuff?
Just one thing. Darren has five rookies. It's Danny Willett, Rafa Cabrera-Bello, Matt Fitzpatrick, and Chris Wood. So it's five.
Yeah, right.
So that's and he said that he seems, of course, he has to say it that way. He said that he was very pleased that it's very rare that you begin any such list with the reigning Masters champion. But it is true at some point. But I am with you. I think Russell Knox and the Americans, I think that Justin Thomas should be the one. I think JB is out because, to me, he has, like, played himself out lately. And he just played in one time, and I don't know. I just don't see him, even though Hazeltine is this big course and his power would be good, but so could be Justin Thomas. And I believe that they're looking for somebody young that could have that experience. And, of course, you can hide him in the first days of that. So I don't know. That's my thought. I'm not sold on it. I don't think that it will happen, but it's something that is being thrown around. And like you mentioned, the guys up top, especially Jordan Spieth, who is a very good friend of him, I know that he will be vouching for him. So, but on the European side, I'm with you. I think Russell Knox is one of the two. Lee Westwood should be the other one. Now the third one, wow. I wouldn't want to be there. I think, you know, like you mentioned, Thomas Peters is playing excellent. The Martin Keimer, what a great player. How can you leave him? He's not playing that bad either lately. They have Tyrrell Hatton, who's also playing well. I mean,
I didn't mention him.
Yeah, Tyrrell Hatton. And there's also Victor Duluzon, who's starting to play back again good lately. But I don't know. It's a lot of people. I would scratch Søren Kjeldsen. I don't think he'll make the team, but Tyrrell Hatton, Russell Knox, Lee Westwood, Martin Keimer, and Thomas Peters are five to make three spots. So I don't know. It's going to be tough, but like you mentioned, this is going to be decided in the next few weeks. So we'll see what goes on. But to me, definitely the three that the U.S. will announce pretty soon are going to be Bubba Watson, Matt Kuchar, and Ricky Fowler. To me, that's nothing else after that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's all I have, Carlos. So if you're ready to talk about the World Cup.
Of course. Hey, as the event edges even closer, the field for the World Cup of golf has started to take shape. Jason Day, Bubba Watson, Adam Scott, and Danny Willett are among the headliners for the World Cup of Golf, which will return to play this year at Kingston's Heath Golf Club in Melbourne, Australia, on Thanksgiving weekend. A total of 28 countries will be represented in this playing of the event, which began in 1953 with Antonio Cerda and Roberto Di Vincenzo of Argentina winning in Montreal, Canada. As defending individual champion of 2013 World Cup of Golf, Jason Day automatically qualified as the top-ranked player for Australia. He chose Adam Scott as his partner. the two paired to win the Cup in 2013. However, as the invitations are decided from the World Golf Rankings, they would have been automatically entered as the number one in the world. The current World Cup organizers invited the top 28 available players of different countries from the official World Golf Ranking as of Monday, August 1st. They had until August 12th to commit or decline. Those who committed will choose partners by August 26th. Bubba Watson's partner has not yet been named. However, he's looking forward to the event. Masters champ Danny Willett has also committed, and he has invited Lee Westwood to be his partner. It will be the first time that Westwood will play in the event. The tournament will be a 72-hole, two-man 18 event, according to the PGA Tour. Days 1 and 3 will be foursomes, alternate shot format, and days 2 and 4 are four-ball, best-ball play. This time, it won't be an individual title, so it will be pure team play. U.S. golfers have a tradition of strong play in the World Cup. Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmer won the event four times, as did Davis Love III and Fred Couples. No other team has won more. The U.S. has won the World Cup of Golf 24 times more than any other country. In many years, there has been also an individual trophy, but that will not be the case this year. The World Cup of Golf is the fifth event co-sanctioned by the International Federation of Tours, including the PGA Tour. The others are the Dell Match Play, the Mexico Championship, the Bridgestone Invitational, and the HSBC Championships. Fred, as I look at the PGA Tour press release and the full list of players confirmed so far, it's rounding to be a good one. I see down the list Russell Knox is going to be there with Duncan Stewart, Hideki Matsuyama, he still doesn't have a partner, Rafa Cabrera Bello, Benny Yang, Emiliano Grillo, Shane Lowry, but all of them don't have partners. Alex Noren from Sweden is going to play with David Lindbergh, who's number 52 on the official World Golf Rankings. A pairing from Denmark, Søren Kjeldsen and Thorbjørn Olsen, looks intriguing. There's going to be also Danny Lee, Francesco Molinari, and a pair from Belgium, Thomas Peters and Nicholas Kolsaerts. Looks very good. Looking lower there, also names that catch my eye, Jamie Donaldson, Victor Louison. Vijay is going to be there as well. So, and David Hearn from Canada, maybe he will invite Graham Delay. Who knows, but it looks to be shaping into a big one.
Yeah, that's always kind of a good event towards the end of the year. It's kind of got overshadowed by some of the fall tours and some of the European tour stuff, but it's a good event. Hey, Carlos, this story makes me sad and illustrates the difficulties family have after the death of a parent, especially one that is supposedly being taken care of by one of their children and neglects the rest of the family's rights. We reported the death of Charlie Sifford, one of the first black professional golfers, early last year. He was inducted into World Golf Hall of Fame in 2004 and received the Medal of Freedom from President Obama in 2015. Sifford was 92 years old at his death and had been living with his youngest son over the last few years near Cleveland. A court in Ohio just sentenced Sifford's youngest son, Craig, along with his wife, to 36 months in prison for robbing his father's estate. The Sifferts pleaded guilty to stealing $315,000 from Charlie Sifford. The couple made payments to themselves over a three-year period out of the estate, including a $40,000 check to pay off a mortgage at Craig Sifford's home and a $120,000 wire transfer to his private waste management business. The assistant prosecuting attorney told the judge that Charlie Sifford was taken advantage of during the most vulnerable period of his life. I am not an attorney, but I urge any aging listener to visit their family attorney, set up the appropriate wills, trust, and legal documentation to prepare their estate for distribution and management should they become unable to handle their own affairs. It's real easy to do, Carlos. This is not talking golf here. Just people need to do this stuff, especially when they get to be over 50 years old. Serious consequences and conflicts among siblings could be avoided if the parents would just take care of their own stuff before they can't do it anymore, Carlos. Sad story.
Very sad story, especially coming from the son of Charlie Sifford. That's really, really, really sad to hear that.
Hey. You know, he spent his life trying to do it with class. He spent his life fighting discrimination. He spent his life opening doors that were closed, and doing it with class. And and to have this happen in his death, that really makes me sad, Carlos.
Totally, I second that. Hey, some news from around the PGA Tour. You might remember there were rumors about where the second WGC event of the 2016-17 PGA Tour season would end up after it moved away from Trump National earlier this year. We knew the locale would be Mexico, and now we have an official golf course. I'm going to say it in Spanish. The Club de Golf Chapultepec.
You just love doing that, don't you? Yeah, there you go. Yes. That's right,
Club
down your alley.
Club de Golf Chapultepec. We'll play host to the 2017 WGC Mexico Championship from March 2 to the 5th in 2017. The WGC series was created back in 1999, and this edition of the tournament at the historic course in Mexico City will mark the first time the event has been held outside of Miami after it was held at Trump Doral for 10 years. According to the PGA Tour, sponsor Grupo Salinas has signed a 7-year contract, and Rodrigo Lebois, the chairman of the club, which opened in 1928, said about the course, and I quote, "There will be plenty of tough holes that will keep the leaderboard interesting," end of quote. Yeah, I saw a video with an aerial view of the course. As a matter of fact, I'm about to post, after I finish this, the link on my Twitter account, Carlos Torres SD, for all of you to see it. And it has more trees than I thought it would for some reason. And it actually looks like some of the California courses that are currently being played on the PGA Tour. It's a WGC event, so the field strength should be no problem. And if the video is any indication, the course won't be either. And also from the PGA Tour, CIMB Group, the title sponsor of the CIMB Classic since its inception in 2010, announced the extension of its title sponsorship of the golf tournament through 2020. The 4-year extension reflects the success of the only official PGA Tour FedEx Cup event in Southeast Asia, which is also the richest in the region with a purse of $7 million. Since it was first staged, the tournament has attracted world-class professionals like Tiger Woods, Henrik Stenson, Alan Scott, Sergio Garcia, Ernie Els, and Ryo Ishikawa. CIMB Classic, being one of the most prestigious and biggest sporting events in the region, has undoubtedly boosted Malaysia's position as a golfing tourism destination, attracting an audience from all over Asia annually. The CIMB Classic was introduced in 2010 as an unofficial event before becoming a FedEx Cup tournament in 2013, co-sanctioned by the Asian Tour and Professional Golf Association of Malaysia. It is held at Kuala Lumpur Golf and Country Club and features a limited field of 78 players. Fred Justin Thomas is the reigning champion, and the upcoming CIMB Classic will be held from the 20th to the 23rd of October, and is the second tournament of the 2016-17 PGA Tour schedule.
Hey, Carlos, I got a question for you. You know, now with this WGC moving from Florida to Mexico, you've got the WGC HSBC that's in Singapore. You've got the CIMB Classic that's there in Malaysia that, you know, a few guys venture out to every year on their way over to the WGC. And then you've got the Olympics being held there in Brazil and going to be in Japan here in 4 years' time. Do you think this will get more guys to venture out? You know, is this the start of more of a world-like tour, getting guys to play in other places and not just being satisfied to play here in the United States?
Could be, but I don't know. With the PGA Tour being how it is, I doubt it. But the European Tour is taking those measures. They are already a world tour, so hopefully, it could become a world tour, but I don't know what the PGA has in mind. They only think about themselves, so I don't know. I really don't see it so far.
Carlos, golf is becoming a little bit more violent. We have two stories in the news yes, that demonstrate that even, you know, well, Tiger can tell you about violence with a 9-iron, I guess. We have that happened a long time ago now. You know, that's like 8 years ago. Golf can bring out the best and the worst in people. In Tulsa, Oklahoma, a retired fire marshal was in a Golf Galaxy parking lot when he recognized a set of golf clubs a young man was carrying out of the store. He recognized them because they had been stolen from him earlier in the day at nearby La Fortune Park Golf Course. The 59-year-old confronted the young man, ultimately drawing his gun on the suspected thief, and forced him to the ground with the threat, "I'm going to kill you." Cooler heads prevailed, and the proper authorities were alerted. The young man was taken away in handcuffs. It seems he had tried to sell the stolen clubs to Golf Galaxy for some quick cash, but was thwarted when the real owner saw them and disrupted the thief's plan. In a second story, and I'm sure every golfer can relate to this, a man was stabbed during an argument over slow play on a Utah golf course. 61-year-old, now he should be older to know better, right? 61-year-old Lee Johnson approached the group playing in front of he and his wife and asked if they could play through. Evidently, Mr. Johnson was not happy with the group's response, pulled a pocket knife from his pocket, and stabbed one of the group that was in front of him. Johnson was then wrestled to the ground by one of the other men in the group and was charged with aggravated assault. Rough crowd there in Utah. I thought those were all Mormons, brotherly love, and all that stuff out there. Hey, the next time, Carlos, someone wants to play through, you may want to just let them. You know, what happened to the pursuit of golf as a gentlemanly pastime?
I really don't know. I didn't know it was getting this violent. I might get out of it. Just because of this. And the Zika and all those things.
Zika. Yeah, the Zika. But there you go. That's the real reason right there.
Well, with that, we'll wrap up our Par 5 news. And we'll take our second short break. And when we come back, we have the practice range. And we're going to talk to you about what's coming up pretty soon. And you already heard from our coach what is coming up. What is it coming
playoffs?
Up?
Don't talk about it. Playoffs? You kidding me? Playoffs?
Yeah, we will have to, and that is the FedEx Cup playoffs, and we'll talk about it in the practice race. Don't go away.
Thank you for listening to the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the practice range for every week for the night picking topic, and we both take our shot at it. That's why we call it the practice range. And this week, you know, the Olympics are over, the regular season is in the books, and the FedEx Cup playoffs is up next. And that is what we'll be previewing for you here tonight. For starters, the competition that caps off the PGA Tour season turns 10 this year and can be confusing to casual and diehard golf fans alike. But some might say, a playoff in golf? I mean, like the ones in football, basketball, baseball, and hockey? What's the deal? Is this a thing? Well, it is indeed a thing, and it's great. But if you find yourself asking these questions, don't worry, we got you covered here. The FedEx Cup is a season-long point competition used to determine an ultimate champion of the PGA Tour's season, and which golfers will receive a tour card for the following year. Points are accrued over the first 43 tournaments in the season, ending in the Windham Championship, which Sewell King won last weekend. After the Windham, the 125 golfers with the highest point totals and anyone tied for the 125th spot move ahead to a four-tournament playoff, which takes place over the ensuing 5 weeks. You might ask, what's the big deal? Well, the FedEx Cup playoffs take place over the final four tournaments of the season: the Barclays, Deutsche Bank Championship, BMW Championship, and the Tour Championship. And the winner of each tournament gets 2,000 points from the from the 2,500 points used the last few years. The reduction in points awarded gives the regular season some added weight. The top 125 golfers from the regular season take their points with them and compete in the Barclays, after which the field is narrowed to 100. Those 100 compete in the Deutsche Bank Championship, and the top 70 move on from there. The BMW Championship determines the final 30 golfers who will compete for the FedEx Cup Trophy in the final event of the year. But before the Tour Championship in Atlanta, points are reset. First place is given 2,000 points, second place is given 1,800, all the way down to the 30th golfer, which is given 168 points. And each of the top five going into the Tour Championship at Eastlake controls his own destiny. Whoever wins the tournament gets those 2,000 points added to his total, so the Tour Championship is the ultimate end game a golfer wants to qualify for each year. PGA Tour Chief Marketing Officer Ty Volto described it this way, and I quote, "Everyone knows that if you made it to the Tour, your whole year is about positioning. You want to place yourself as high in that top 125 as you can so you can advance every week." Oh, but you might say, I don't know, that sounds a lot different than what you're used to seeing in golf. Well, that's the point. One of the reasons for the playoffs was to put the best golfers in the world up against one another for a few consecutive weeks, something we don't get to see often during the regular season. But you may ask, but what about the majors? I'm sure you thought, that those were the most important events in golf. Well, nobody says the playoffs are bigger than the majors. They would simply say the playoffs provide us with a crescendo at the end of the year, a time of the year which, prior to the playoffs, there was not much this much interest, excitement, and competitive friction. Prior to the FedEx Cup playoffs, golf was winding down after the PGA Championship as compared to the other sports that were gearing up. Now there's a structure in which, after the PGA Championship, there are still some significant things for golf fans to follow. So what exactly is at stake here? Well, besides a trophy that says you were the best golfer over the season and bragging rights over all the fellow pros, well, there's just this thing about an $8 million purse in each tournament on top of a $35 million bonus pool, with the FedEx Cup champion receiving an additional $10 million. Like Kieran Clark would say, our good friend, is the richer getting richer. Tiger Woods is the only one to have won it twice, but every previous winner of this cup, Vijay Singh, Jim Furyk, Bill Haas, Brent Snedeker, Henrik Stenson, Billy Horschel, and the defending champion Jordan Spieth, are in it this year and have a chance to tie him for most. Tiger is also the only one to have won three events in this series. And here this year, Jason Day, Rory McIlroy, Henrik Stenson, Dustin Johnson, Phil Mickelson, Steve Stricker, and Vijay Singh have won two and will try to tie him or surpass him this year. Fred, 6 years as a player, won two of the events, including Jason Day, Billy Horschel, Henrik Stenson, and Rory McIlroy the last 4 years, and Tiger and Vijay the first two. What's your take on this year's playoffs?
Well, it starts with the numbers. You know, we like a lot of numbers in golf. And as you mentioned, the numbers are 125, 100, 70, 30, and 10 million. But the biggest number of all, the most important number, is $69 million to be distributed over the next four events. It's the biggest money grab in the history of golf. Jason Sobol wrote a piece for ESPN which compares the early days of the FedEx Cup to this year's inaugural Olympic golf competition. The players had to buy in, and they were not anxious to put themselves in an all-or-nothing, go-for-broke elimination tournament like the FedEx Cup playoffs. But they are now all in. You know, here in America, we have a little saying, throw enough money at it and it'll always fix the problem. Well, $69 million will fix a lot of problems. So, the FedEx Cup is seen by many as an out-and-out money grab, including our good buddy Kieran. But if someone's going to offer it, and I'm a professional golfer, I'm going to do my best to collect the biggest share possible, and that's what these guys are doing over the next 5 weeks. Chances are that one of the top 10 heading into the FedEx Cup will hoist the trophy and collect the $10 million first-place check from the bonus pool at Eastlake after the Tour Championship. Those are Jason Day, Dustin Johnson, Adam Scott, Russell Knox, Jordan Spieth, Brant Snedeker, Patrick Reed, Phil Mickelson, Kevin Na, and your guy, Justin Thomas. You know, there's how he could make his move in the Ryder Cup. If he'd really make a good showing in the playoffs, he'd almost force Davis to pick him, don't you think?
Don't
you know, there are some surprising names on this list that got my attention when I looked through it. You know, Adam Scott has two wins and two runners-up, plus $5 million in earnings this year, but he only has one top-10 finish in his last 10 starts dating back to March. At third in the FedEx Cup leading into play, he's essentially guaranteed a spot into the Tour Championship and a big bonus check to go with whatever prize money he manages to earn. Justin Thomas is one of the bright young stars on the Tour and has had three third-place finishes to go along with his win at the CIMB Classic last fall. He just posted a third of the Travelers, but has missed three cuts in his last 10 starts. So, it breaks down to four events. The Barclays, the Deutsche Bank, the BMW, the Tour Championship, all with $8.5 million purses, and they're contested over 5 weeks. There is a week break between the BMW and the Tour Championship. Next year, there's going to be some changes to the playoffs. We're not sure what they're going to be yet. They haven't announced it. The Northern Trust will replace the Barclays as the first event in the FedEx Cup playoff. But the Deutsche Bank contract is up. They may be exiting. We're not sure. Is somebody going to take their place? They may be going to a three-tournament playoff system. I really don't see that happening. I think someone will pick it up. But there is some question marks heading to next year. The courses, really good. Bethpage Black this week. That's going to be worth watching just right there to see how the players perform on Bethpage Black. They go to TPC Boston for the Deutsche Bank. Crooked Stick, the site of John Daly's big PGA Championship win outside of Indianapolis, will be the site of the BMW. And then they move to Atlanta, to East Lake, the home of Bobby Jones, for the Tour Championship. So, Carlos, I mentioned $8.5 million at each tournament. So there's four of those. So that's $34 million, with each winner earning $1.485 million each week. The bonus pool is going to dish out another $35 million, with $10 million of that going to the winner of the season-long FedEx Cup. So, you mentioned the past winners. Tiger's the only player to have won it twice. You know, you can pick favorites. I don't know. I look back at the winners of the 36 playoff events. The popular names keep popping up, and I just don't think you need to look much past the top 10 right now to find the winners of the four events plus the big check at the end of the year. Carlos, I find it hard to believe that it's the end of the 2016 PGA Tour season. It seems like just a couple of short months ago we began talking about this year and the possibilities. Four new major champions have been crowned. The Olympics was a success, and the Ryder Cup is just around the corner. But the year is winding down, buddy, and they're going to divvy up a bunch of money over the next few weeks on the PGA Tour.
And I don't know if you watched Justin Rose's conference today or portions of it, but you know that the Olympics are going to be a lot to be asked tomorrow for Rory McIlroy, Jason Day, Dustin Johnson, and Matt Kuchar, who will be in the conferences tomorrow. They'll be, Justin Rose today didn't have, I think he was asked about the playoffs, because he was asked how he would be able to recover and get some now after the hangover of the of the Olympics, if he would be able to refocus. And he said, it's going to be hard, but I have to do it. That's the only way, the only question he got from the FedEx Cup playoffs. And tomorrow, you can watch the press conferences from Rory, Jordan, Jason, and Matt Kuchar, who was in the Olympics. But they're going to be from 11:30 to 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Those are going to be the press conferences. And to talk a little bit about who to win, all big names have been the winners here. And like you say, there have been some exemptions, like when Billy Horschel came in and from out of nowhere he won it. Bill Haas also came from way behind to win it, and Brent Snedeker came out of nowhere. But otherwise have been big names winning most of the tournaments. One thing that I would say is that, which I really don't like, and I think it's a reason why not everybody loves them, is that while most agree that the playoffs, I want to know your take on this, while most agree that the playoffs are a better way to finish a season than the fizzle after the PGA Championship that occurred before the FedEx Cup was implemented, now there's some disagreement about the structure from both fans and golfers. One point of contention is the points reset. The reset adds some extra drama to the final tournament of the season, but critics say that it diminishes the regular season. As an example, let me put it this way. Rory McIlroy won the Deutsche Bank and the BMW Championships in 2013 and held a commanding 3,000-point lead going into the Tour Championship. But due to the reset, McIlroy lost his big advantage and ultimately lost to Snedeker, who won the FedEx Cup. In fact, in each of the last 6 years, the winner of the Tour Championship has also won the FedEx Cup, which has led many to believe that too much weight is given to the final tournament of the season if the goal is to crown the champion of the whole year. I mean, regardless of the importance of the final tournament, vis-a-vis the other tournaments in the playoffs, there's no doubt that the FedEx Cup gives golf season a dramatic finale, something that the sport was lacking before 2007. So what's your take on this? Do you think it's something that should be changed, looked into? Do you like it? What's your take?
Well, over this is the 10th year, and over the 9 years previous, they've changed the point allotment a couple different times. You know, they walk a fine line trying to keep each tournament relevant and kind of keep guys in it with a chance to win. At the same time, they don't want to take away or detract from the players that have had a good year and earned those points. They don't want to just take them away from them. They want them to have some value for them. So they really work on that, and they study it every year after the FedEx Cup is over and tinker with it a little bit. So, no, I don't. Carlos, I can't. They're trying to keep it relevant and make sure that the players that make it to the final 30 have a shot. Usually what is it? It's the top five going into the week of the Tour Champions usually are the only ones that really have a realistic shot of winning the $10 million. Any of the 30 could win the tournament and pick up the 1.485 first place check, and also increase their bonus pool money. But usually the top five are the only ones that have a numerical chance to, a mathematical chance to win the $10 million. So they fight that. I don't know. I think it keeps interest. I like it better than, like you say, just kind of ending the season after the PGA Championship. Football starting, and this gives guys at least a little bit of a reason to watch some golf or follow it, to pick up their tablet or their smartphone and see what's going on a little bit. So, I can't really say that it needs to be changed a lot or is way off base. I can't do that, Carlos.
Okay, that's fair. But my point is, I know that the top 30 have a chance, but there are two things. The 30th needs a lot of help to win it.
A lot of things to
happen for him to win. But the fact, like, let's say this. I mean, Jason Day won twice last year. He was maybe the hottest player going in to that, and he didn't win it just because Jordan Spieth won the last tournament. It's like there's a lot of emphasis on that last tournament. I'm not saying that they should change the whole thing, but there's like a lot of emphasis into it because the last 6 years, the one that has won that last tournament is the one that wins the FedEx Cup, and at the same time, you know, is named the champion golfer of the year for the PGA Tour. And
Spieth had built up so many points by winning two majors, you know, finishing just outside the playoff of the Open, and finishing runner-up to Jason Day in the PGA. He built up such huge leads because he had such a great year. So are you going to take that away? And, you know, does Jason Day's two wins in the FedEx Cup mean more than Jordan Spieth's great year through the year? You know, it's a tough argument.
Yeah, but remember, Jason had also a major, had won more tournaments than Jordan, and had won two in the FedEx Cup. And then the points reset. So he really, that lead wasn't that big a deal when you come to think about it, in that because the points reset for the Tour Championship. That's what I mean. I mean, they changed it, and that lead, if it would have been that way, it would have been fine because Jordan would have had that big lead going into the Tour Championship anyway, and he would have won it, and then it's okay. It's the point that I bring, like it happened to Rory back in 2013 when he had 3,000-point lead going into the Tour Championship. Nobody denies anywhere that Rory McIlroy 2013 was the champion golfer. And, I mean, player of the year in the awards, that's one thing, but winning the PGA Tour Championship, the champion, being declared a champion just because he lost the last one, that's really tough to me to swallow. But hey, there are a few points of view for that, and that's you have yours, I have mine, and I'm sure that's why it's divided as well. Like I said, there is some disagreement about the structure from both fans and golfers, and this is what it's all about. Well, with that, we'll wrap up our practice range. We have one more short break. When we come back, we have two things for you. We have the Chip Shot from Fred. He's going to talk to us about those things. You see, he's doing this for the show. That's why he travels so much. And he went through northern West Michigan. He's going to talk to us about golfing, traveling there. And at the end, we'll have the final thought. So let's take our last short break. When we come back, we have the Chip Shot from Fred.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at @edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for a Chip Shot. Fred, you have it for us. It's about golfing, traveling in Northwest Michigan. So tell us all about it.
Yeah, I had the opportunity to visit some of my favorite places in northern Michigan last weekend. My wife and I had some visitors, and we gave them the tour of some of the best things to see up there. We started at Manistee, Michigan, on the eastern shore of Lake Michigan. And Manistee has one of the best beaches in the state, and it's a short drive along the coast, provides several wonderful views of the lake, and winds up in the small town of Onekama on Portage Lake. There are a couple of great golf courses in this area as well. Manistee National, the Heathlands at Onekama. It sits high above the town on the sand dunes and offers wonderful views of Portage Lake. Farther north on M22 sits Arcadia Bluffs. It is annually ranked as one of the best public courses in the state and now has added cottages for stay-and-play golfers. Plus, a second 18-hole course is in the works and should be ready for play in 2018. I should also mention a small country golf course that I like to play is Chestnut Hills at Arcadia. It has an old 9 and a new 9 across the road. On the new 9 holes, the owner built 4 of the finest golf holes that can be found on any golf course, and the price is pleasing to the pocket. Continuing north along the western coast of Michigan, Frankfurt has some of the best golf to be found anywhere. And I mean this sincerely. Crystal Lakes Golf Club is a treat. Crystal Mountain offers world-class skiing in the winter and challenging tests of golf in the summer months. Plus, the accommodations and activities at Crystal Mountain will please the entire family. But the topper is the famed Alistair McKenzie, Perry Maxwell-designed Crystal Downs. It opened for play in 1929 and is one of the most exclusive clubs in the nation. Since the 1930s, the homestead has been the resort of choice for visitors to northern Michigan. It sits just north of Frankfort and offers lodging of every type and style, plus has a highly rated inn at the homestead. It has a complete array of outdoor activities for the entire family. A 9-hole course called Mountain Flowers sits on the property, and the highly acclaimed Manitou Passage is just a couple minutes away. Dave Pels maintains a short game school at the homestead. Any trip to this part of the world would not be complete without a stop at Sleeping Bear Dunes. Rising over 400 feet above the lake, they are a natural wonder, and kids of all ages enjoy frolicking on the steep slopes. A side trip into the small town of Glen Arbor will satisfy the shopping urges of the female population. The locals favor burgers and long necks at Al's, plus the Boondocks offers dining for the entire family. August and September are the perfect time to visit the northwest section of Michigan. I have just given a brief overview of the area here, and in addition, Traverse City is a gem not to be missed. Plus, there are over 20 vineyards on Leelanau and Mission Peninsulas that will satisfy wine lovers. For the more adventurous golfers, there are two nearby casinos for evening activities. Whether you want fine dining, a wine connoisseur's itinerary, water sports, or great golf, Northwest Michigan has it all. If anyone would like more information about this area, drop me an email at fred@back9mediagroup.com with the number 9. It's fred@back9mediagroup.com. I'll be happy to forward the links and help you with anything you might need. Carlos, that wraps that up for me.
And see, that's why he says that he's doing this all for the show. He's
working.
Not faking. See, he got all the information, and what a great information. Thank you, Fred. I'm sure a lot of our fans and listeners love that. And like you said, hey, they can reach you by email any questions about Northern Michigan, Total Michigan, and, of course, Ohio. You can ask him. Hey, let's go now to our final thoughts. I'm going to start right away. The very sad saga of Robert Allen continues, and now his fate following his early morning arrest inside an Illinois casino will be decided by local prosecutors. Rock Island Deputy Chief of Police Jason Foy said on Monday the police case will be handed over to the state's attorney's office to decide if disorderly conduct and criminal trespass charges will be pursued against Allenby. He's scheduled to appear in the Rock Island County Court on September 15. He was arrested inside Jewelers Casino about 2:29 a.m. on Saturday after Illinois Gaming Board agents called for police assistance. They have not released specific details on what he's being accused of doing, but this sounds really bad. As you might remember, he made world headlines last year when, after missing the cut at the Sony Open in Hawaii, he claimed he was robbed, kidnapped, and beaten after drinking at a Honolulu wine bar, and his face was badly bruised and swollen. So hopefully this turns out for the better for him. He can straighten up, and we get some more details. We'll have everything for you as it gets unveiled to us. And finally, hey, long drive fans, don't be sad. The two-time world long drive champion Jimmy Satlowski isn't finished hitting long drives. He's just finished hitting long drives only. That is because he's retiring from the sport of long drive to try his hand at a career in professional golf. The Canadian made the announcement on his sponsor's Callaway's Golf Callaway Live digital show. He will begin his global tournament schedule at the Royal Jakarta Golf Club when the Asian Tour event gets underway from October 6th through the 9th. Satlowski isn't driving blindly into the world of golf, pro golf. He has played four times on the Web.com Tour, making the cut three times. He's also made one of two cuts in the Mackenzie Tour in Canada. He also made it through the local qualifiers for this year's U.S. Open when he shot at 65, though he didn't make it through the sectionals to get to Oakland. Fred Sadlowski definitely is bringing firepower. Let's see if he can add some spice to it.
Yeah, that should be interesting. Carlos, we had a couple notable deaths in the world of golf last week. Photographer Jules Alexander and golf designer Robert Cupp. No one works harder at a golf tournament than the men and women photographers who capture the images, lugging heavy cameras and equipment around the course through heat, humidity, and rain if necessary to get the right angle and shot. One of the very best was Jules Alexander. He was 90, shot some of the best pictures of the golfing greats over the past 50 years. Robert Cupp was a past president of the American Society of Golf Course Superintendents. He started out as a professional golfer, worked with Jack Nicklaus for 15 years before striking on his own. He was truly a Renaissance man, had many talents. He was a published author. He was an accomplished artist. He illustrated Ted Williams' instructional book, The Science of Hitting. He was a blacksmith, a writer, and a musician. He played guitar and the cello. Just a talented guy. Gene Sowers won the U.S. Senior Open. He defeated Billy Mayfair. He was congratulated on the final green at Sauda Country Club by Billy Mayfair, who knows a thing or two about surviving debilitating health issues, because Mayfair had survived testicular cancer. Sowers was out of golf for some time, suffering from Stevens-Johnson syndrome, a rare condition which, to put it nicely, is like having your skin burned off from the inside. It generates splotches of dead skin all over his forearms and thighs. He spent 7 weeks in different hospitals and at one point nearly gave up. He's glad he hung on now as he survived a difficult week of weather and treacherous Scioto golf course conditions to win the U.S. Senior Open. John Daly lost yet again. At the Czech Masters, they kicked off the week with a frat house contest closest to the keg. And who better to participate in such an event than John Daly? Daly and other pros in the field took shots at a wooden keg perched on a floating platform in a river from like 94 yards. Andy Sullivan won and was awarded free beer for a year. So, Carlos, that's everything I got. That wraps up the Back 9 report for August 23rd, 2016.
John Daly must be heartbroken he missed on those beers.
Yeah, exactly. That's like a major for him.
He's on a hangover right now. Well, Back 9 is that's up. Another week of the Back 9 Report presented by eDrunk.com. Thank you for listening to us. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Also, don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Block Talk Radio, or if you miss it, check it out on iTunes or TuneIn. If you haven't done so, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at Back9Report with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Fred Alvader. We wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.